Genug vom täglichen Grind? Spiele Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3 und 4 und grinde, als wär's 2002. Ein legendäres Remake der Originalspiele mit neuen Parks, krasseren Tricks, plattformübergreifendem Multiplayer und abgefahrenen neuen Spielmodi. Hol dir das neue Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3 und 4 und zeig der Welt, der Shred stirbt nie. Jetzt vorbestellen auf tonyhawkthegame.com/playnow. Verfügbar ab dem 11. Juli.
The Axe of the Blood God.
Welcome to another episode of Axe of the Blood God, US Gamer's official RPG podcast. I'm your host, Kat Bailey. With me is my humble co-host, as always, Nadia Oxford.
Hello.
And as usual, we'll be talking about RPGs, big and small, Western, Eastern, and everything in between, because it's our favorite genre. It's the best.
It is the best.
And this week, we've got a lot of ground to cover, as always, because, God, every time it seems like I'm like, oh, man, what am I going to talk about this week? Like, I got, like, 5 billion things to cover, so... And that is going to continue to be the case through this very busy holiday season. But The first thing that we have to cover, Skyrim Remastered, it's out. We've been playing it. We have some thoughts. And it's also been kind of interesting to revisit Skyrim after 5 years. I can't believe it is now 5 years old. That's really terrifying.
Yeah, we're all getting old.
Shut up. I'm not getting old. I'm getting younger. I'm young at heart forever.
Well, I'm young at heart, that's for sure.
And we will also be talking about Exist Archive, The Other Side of the Sky, which is, well, everybody calls it the spiritual successor to Valkyrie Profile. I don't really buy that.
Yeah, I'm interested to hear about that one.
Yeah, I think it's more of an off-brand Valkyrie Profile. A little different.
Dollar store brand.
But that does not necessarily mean that I dislike it. So Let's get started. Nadia... We've both been playing Skyrim Remastered. I had thoughts on the game itself in an article that I wrote titled Skyrim Remastered, Bethesda's Impossible Task, which was kind of a, like, they want, what it boiled down to is that with Skyrim, Bethesda wanted to create a massive, open, really interesting world that also lives up to what people expect from a AAA presentation. And there are only a finite number of resources that you can put into development. And people's expectations are always a little loony. But at the end of the day, they've crafted this incredibly compelling world to explore, in my opinion. A lot of people are like kind of put off by it. Like, they're like, I don't understand the appeal, but I personally find it really interesting. But when you can see the seams in this world that's supposed to be like completely immersive, I feel like people are a lot harder on these games than they are with other games.
Yes.
Like, they're more inclined to be like, nope, doesn't work, breaks immersion, like, just throw it all away, it's a bad game. What are your thoughts, Nadia?
Well, I think the 5 years have worked against it as far as people's opinion go, because I've seen so many people say, why do you want to play Skyrim when you have, like, Witcher 3 or, like, any other open-world game that has come out since Skyrim?
Okay, all right. First of all, Witcher 3 and Skyrim are apples and oranges.
Yeah, I know, but
totally
people are...
totally different games. People are like, Witcher 3 is better than Skyrim. No, I don't really think it is. I think Skyrim is... an amazing game if you are into that particular type of RPG.
No, like, I totally agree. And because I'm just translating the will of Twitter here, the Twitter verse, as it were.
You're wrong, Twitter.
I have not played Witcher 3 yet, so I cannot say one way or the other. But the point is,
sorry, you really like Witcher 3.
I know, it's one of those on my list games.
It's more homework for you.
More homework.
Yep.
Right. But Skyrim, it's like your article said, it has a very inherent, like, something about it is just makes it hard to turn away from. And I think just the fact that, and this is true as much, this is as true as it is now as it was 5 years ago, the fact that you can just wander off the path, like, so far off the path, like, marauding dragons, so who cares? There's this guy who wants me to go, like, you know, find cheese at a tavern or something like that. I don't know. It's just so... It's just the least hand-holdy game I can think of, and sometimes I am just in the mood for that, and nothing will change that.
Yeah. Somebody wrote a comment in the article, and I just want to read it for you really quickly, because I think it does a really terrific job of encapsulating, like, why exactly I just keep getting hooked on these games. Mm-hmm. It's by Mojo Box, and he said, "I can respect when people are left cold by the storytelling in Elder Scrolls games. I love the more fleshed-out stories of Witcher 3 or BioWare. But for me, a big part of my enjoyment of The Elder Scrolls is how incredibly rarely it will contradict any internally developed narrative you have for your character." Mm-hmm. Yes, the storytelling is slight, but it's slight with intention and purpose, not out of sheer laziness and incompetence. The Witcher 3 is a fantastic game, but it's Geralt's story, not mine. I'm just along for the ride. Mm-hmm. Oh, sure, I get to make some choices, but my options are always framed within the limits of what Geralt would potentially do. The success of the Elder Scrolls games is that if I say, I want to be a cowardly Imperial merchant who doesn't fight anything, I want to roam from town to town buying low and selling high, paying merchants to do my work for me, that whole dragon thing, toss it, the game just shrugs and says, oh, fine.
Yeah, I know absolutely.
I know some people just won't get or like that, but that's why the Elder Scrolls and Skyrim especially feels like a living world more than most open worlds. Mm-hmm. I get extremely invested in my characters because they are my creations, and the extent the game goes to in order to not contradict that creation is impressive in its own right.
Yeah, that's an excellent comment, and it holds very true. As you say, Witcher 3, even though I haven't played it, I know that it follows Geralt, and whereas... You know, Skyrim, you are a nameless prisoner, and you just, however you build yourself up from there, that is completely up to you.
Yeah, somebody was saying that they wanted to be a master of blacksmith, and that was like their entire goal for the game.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, right on. That's actually kind of cool.
Yeah, exactly. I wanted
to engage in my fanfic and get married to my werewolf girlfriend and buy the most expensive house in Skyrim. That's like my personal goal.
Are you going to marry Aelia the Huntress?
Oh, of course. Are you kidding me?
I like so Farkas. Awesome.
You like Farkas?
I like Farkas. Like Farkas.
And you know, like Skyrim is just so beautiful that I just really enjoy just wandering through it.
I really
and
do.
It feels like a much more interactive world. I think the main difference between a world like Skyrim and a world like, say, Grand Theft Auto, is that one is a kind of a playground and the other is meant to be this world that you're actually living in.
Mm-hmm. I personally never get tired of climbing the 7,000 steps for the first time, even though I'm usually stopped cold, mauled by a frost troll somewhere up there. But it's a very, just like going up there and, like, you know, gradually night falls and you see the northern lights, and it's just really, really nice.
Yeah, it's really striking the first time that you go up to the top of the Throat of the World.
Mm-hmm.
You're making that pilgrimage. It's like, it's really cinematic and really awesome. And the first time you see a dragon is also pretty phenomenal.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if you really want to just kind of chill and not do a lot or kind of build up your character at your own rate, I think that can be a really rewarding role-playing experience, which is why, and to me, like, that's almost kind of the ultimate role-playing experience, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It harkens back, as I was kind of writing my article, like, it harkens back to classic Dungeons & Dragons.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Where you're not, like, I mean, yeah, like, in a lot of classic D&D, like, the DM will be like, okay, well, the DM will set the story for you, and you are following that particular quest. But, like, any good DM will be able to just kind of roll with whatever the characters do and be able to spin the story off from there, right?
Right. So. And that's pretty much what Skyrim does.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I was actually going to bring up in my review, which should be going up probably by the time that this podcast is posted, this is an important game for people who played Skyrim originally on consoles, like myself. Because this is really our first chance to muck around with mods and really kind of play the game for how people on PC have been playing it for years with the assistance of mods. So that's really exciting. Less exciting if you're playing on the PlayStation 4, but the Xbox One has a very robust modding community already, and I've toyed around with it a bit myself.
Yeah, Xbox One is kind of the only choice.
Yes.
And it's really... The PlayStation 4 version doesn't have mods, and it has compressed audio.
It has. It does have mods, but it's very selective in what... Like, last time I checked, like, Xbox had over 200 mods, and PlayStation 4 had something like 50. So, clear winner. Yeah.
Fallout 4 players on PS4 really got screwed.
Yeah.
Which is too bad, because I am one of them.
I'm so sorry.
I severely regret putting, like, God, like 150 hours into that game, because it's like, oh, great, I can't even mod it. That really sucks. It doubly sucks for the settlements in Fallout 4.
It would, yeah.
So much of the stuff that Bethesda put in there was just not good enough. Mm-hmm. I really needed the mods to really flesh out stuff like the weapons racks. Like, the weapons racks they put in there were really not good enough, unfortunately. So, alas. But, oh, yeah. So, yeah, no, this is really important for you, because when Skyrim came out 5 years ago, it came out on the 360 and the PS3.
Yes, and I played it on 360.
Yeah, and so what has it been like, kind of, like, having this remastered experience? Like, do the graphics, like, really pop for you?
Well, the graphics, honestly, like, they do look a lot better than they did on the 360, obviously, but they're not blowing my mind the way, like, most games this generation do, but that's okay, because I appreciate the fact it's such a big, sprawling world, and I really appreciate that I can climb up the top of a mountain and just watch everything, like, roll out underneath me. And I do appreciate fewer bugs. I won't say no bugs, because I saw a mammoth rise and fall off the horizon like it's on a trampoline. So
yes.
But there are definitely fewer bugs. And I haven't gone crazy with mods, but I've installed a couple that really just make me, like, thank the Lord that they exist. Like Rich Merchants of Skyrim, which guarantees that every merchant has a huge store of gold so that you don't have to wait when you're selling a bunch of junk.
Oh my god, that actually sounds like a great mod, because if there was one thing that always drove me freaking crazy in Fallout 4, mm-hmm. is I had a really extensive water farm going, but I had to go around to different merchants and
yes.
sell my water stock, because the merchants never had enough money to be able to pay me.
Yeah, basically, the same with Skyrim. They never have enough to pay, like, if I have, like, a store of dragon bones I want to sell, you know, forget it, because you don't have the money to buy them. And unfortunately, in Skyrim, a lot of the merchants are very specialized, so the dude I see for my archery supplies, he doesn't want to buy these dragon bones, but the general store guy is broke, so mod time.
So what race did you pick? Like, what class and race did you end up picking?
Oh, I actually kind of did a rehash of my original character and build, which I'm kind of disappointed in myself for, but at the same time, not. I'm an Argonian, and I'm kind of like a thief archer.
Okay. And, yeah, sorry.
Oh, I just really dig sniping from a distance.
I mean, that's kind of the way to go in Skyrim, right? Is just, like, sniping everything with a bow.
Yes.
Because if you get up too close, like, you're going to get kind of wrecked. So, I mean, I created a character that was, like, one-handed sword user with left-handed, like, magic.
Mm-hmm.
And that ended up working pretty well for me. Mm-hmm. But I ended up becoming a very stealth-oriented character.
Yes.
And doing, like, 6 times damage with, like, shooting with my bow, like, from a long, long distance. And in some ways, like, I feel like that's just the inevitable direction, unless you go, like, super heavy warrior or
yes.
super with, like, the two-handed weapons or the sword and the shield, and then, like, the heavy armor,
mm-hmm.
or, like, just pure magic user.
Yeah, and so. I was never interested. I've never been a heavy magic user in any of my RPGs ever.
Me neither.
I just don't trust it for some reason. I sound like one of those, like, old-fashioned people in Dragonlance, like, novel. Oh, I don't trust magic. I don't trust the gods, but I just don't.
I think for me, it's more that I've just always found mages a little boring.
That too. I'm sorry.
I mean, it's fight like me. I don't want to wear the robes. The robes are like eh. And usually the mages never seem to have, like, interesting equipment or weapons or anything that I can, like, use as fashion accessories.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, fine. And then. But, I mean, the pyrotechnics are always really awesome.
Yeah, those are always nice. Sometimes they're just fireworks and razzle-dazzle, but they look nice.
That and mages are often kind of overpowered, unless you're playing Dark Souls, interestingly enough. They can be really hit and miss in that game. it's kind of the opposite there. But all right, so you did that. What was it like going back to Skyrim for the first time in 5 years, like starting over?
It was very nostalgic, except, of course, I start up on the, I wake up on the wagon and I'm like, oh, God, there's no, where's the subtitle? So I had to pause it and turn the subtitles on because I couldn't hear a damn thing. But I always liked that intro. I like the way it delivers the game's story without, like, being, without really burdening you down with stuff. Like, you're on this wagon, you're going to be executed. You've got the leader of the rebellion sitting beside you for some crazy reason. What's going on? So I just it kind of really gets me in the mood, as it were, like from the first minute. And of course, a dragon comes in and attacks everything. And it's like, what the hell is going on? These things aren't supposed to exist. But this one certainly does. So it was nice. It was kind of like coming home in a way.
The first 2 hours of Skyrim, like, never fails to get me in the mood.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, just the moment that you're on the wagon and then the dragon shows up and it's like wrecking everything. And then when you make your way to Riverwood and everything kind of quiets down for a minute and you're just taking in all the scenery.
Yes.
And you're just walking at this point because you can't really fast travel.
Yeah.
And then you make your way over to, I think it's Whiterun.
Yeah.
And you meet with the ruler there, and then a dragon comes down and attacks, and you have this like, just really awesome battle. Like,
yes.
I think that bar none, like, those dragon battles are some of the most cinematic and cool just fights that you will have in a video game. Like, the way what they've done with the animation on those things, like, mm-hmm. when they land on the ground, they look absolutely gigantic and they're breathing fire at you. There's just not a lot better. Like, they make for really fantastic enemies. In a way that you just don't see in a lot of other Bethesda RPGs. Like, certainly not Fallout 4. Like, there's nothing like that in, like, say,
yeah,
Fallout 4.
There's no equivalent, except maybe you got Deathclaws, but they're not really even the same.
I mean, Deathclaws are awesome and terrifying, but nowhere on the level of a dragon.
Well, a dragon, dragons are so fascinating, too, because you could be just minding your own business, walking, going wherever, and then, like, you kind of look off on the horizon, you see a dragon just kind of spinning around and roaring, and you're like, do I want a piece of that, or do I want to avoid that? And you can try to avoid it, but you're not guaranteed to get away safely, because they have some pretty good eyesight, I guess.
It's funny when you're, like, walking through the plains, and then you see a dragon show up and start attacking, like, a bandit camp.
Yes.
And you just, like, sit down and watch as, like, the bandits are frantically shooting arrows at it while it, like, spins around in the sky, breathing fire on them.
I saw a dragon go up against a couple of giants, and that was really cool.
Oh, yeah, I love that, too. That's, like, pretty amazing. I always feel bad for the giants because, I mean, if you kind of leave them alone, they'll kind of leave you alone. But holy crap, if you mess with them, they will, like punch you on, like, to the other side of a mountain.
Literally send you flying. I don't know if that bug still exists because I haven't tried for myself, but there it used to be that they'd hit you with your club and you'd go flying up into the air.
So I started playing Skyrim Remastered on my PC, and because I played the original Skyrim on my PC heavily modded, there were some reports going around that modded saves from the original Skyrim would not work in Remastered.
Oh.
That was not the case for me. It works just fine. I loaded up, and my character, like, loaded up Sans armor and hair on the side of a mountain. I think she was having the worst walk of shame of her life. And so I was like, okay. And I was completely disoriented. And, like, trying to remember, like, what all of the commands were and, like, going through my inventory and trying to remember, like, what was good and what was not good.
Why do I have 900 cheese wheels?
I think a lot of my equipment was from mods because, like, for example, I knew that I had a bow, but I definitely did not have a bow.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so I was like, okay. So I equipped some, like, decent armor and, like, weapons and everything and became, like, you know, a ninja, like, was wearing sweet elven superior armor with, like, a ninja cowl, and I had a katana, a flaming katana, which I know that I remembered crafting that thing. and my fireball spell. So I was like, all right, I'm on.
Ready to go.
And then I was trying to remember where I had stored all my gear.
Oh.
And in my original run, I remember that I had done the College of Winterhold quest relatively early on and become essentially Dumbledore. I kind of wish that it had followed up a little bit and let me actually make decisions at the college, or like had an additional quest line, which would have been really awesome, because then I could have actually been Dumbledore. But, you know, maybe there are limits to this, right?
Yes.
Like, one thing that always drives me crazy about the criticisms people seem to have for video games is that they're like mad that it is not all things always.
Yeah.
They're like, this game does not conform to my personal like ambitions for it, therefore it stinks. And they don't seem to really understand the limits of actual game design or resources.
Especially a game the size of Skyrim, which even though it's as buggy as hell, it still astounds me how much there is and how many characters there are and how many quests there are and how endless it is. Like, you mentioned going to Whiterun. I didn't even go to Whiterun, like, at first. Once I left Riverwood, I just went to, like, I went to do the Golden Claw quest. I did this, I did that, and I did a whole bunch of stuff before I finally meandered into Whiterun and said, hey, Jarl, what's up?
Yeah, with Skyrim, I just kind of I got about halfway through the main storyline. But really, I just kind of disappeared down the rabbit hole.
Yeah, me too.
I went in, I defeated the rebels, because screw the rebels, they're racist.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm an Imperial sympathizer Nord. And I was doing the werewolf stuff, and like I was intending to do Dawnguard, and I was just trying to save up enough money to make, to be able to buy my like palace. And I was going through my journal after I reloaded up my game, and I'm like going, what is a lot of these quests? There was this one quest. It was like this, like one chaos demon wants you to do a thing, and I'm like, what?
Should I?
Do I want to actually do this? I don't know. This seems kind of like unnerving. I don't think I want to do this.
That doesn't seem like a good idea.
Like, I'm trying to remember the context for so many of these quests in my journal, and just so I was just like, yeah, I think this kind of resembles like the werewolf quest, so I started going with that, and sure enough, it was.
Oh,
so
good.
That was working out okay. It's been kind of weird to go back to Skyrim after playing Fallout 4 because the VAT system isn't in there.
Yes, that's true.
So
I can never get used to the VAT system, so I'm okay with that.
I'm not sure which one I prefer, to be perfectly honest.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the gunplay in Fallout has ever been especially good.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of what Fallout boils down to is crouching in a corner with a sniper rifle and headshotting people with a VAT system.
Right.
Unless you want to go like really crazy and like just make yourself like a crazy person with a knife who goes around like stabbing people.
And you can.
Which you totally can. I always found it funny that people were like, well, there's no storyline in there for people who want to just like wear a bag on their head and run around naked with a knife. And I'm like, I don't think there is a story. I think the story is you go around stabbing people until somebody stabs you. That's the story.
It's pretty self-explanatory, guys.
It's sort of like people who are like, and forgive me, I'm like digressing heavily here, but it's the people who are like, well, what if I don't want to choose any side? What if I just want to be a neutral? I'm like, well, then the story doesn't progress. Like, you're just a neutral. You don't choose anybody.
Yeah.
You go on and you allow the conflict to happen, like, elsewhere, and you're, like, a blacksmith or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Though they do have a point, and I allude to this in my article, that it is pretty annoying that they make you side with either the rebels or the Empire, and if you don't like either side, it's kind of like,
it's very much a gray choice, because as you say, like the Nords, okay, I can sympathize with their cause, but they're basically like Eskimo Nazis or whatever you want to call them. And
Eskimo Nazis, you mean like Scandinavian Nazis, like Viking
Nazis?
Yeah,
Viking Nazis. Sorry, why is it Eskimo Nazis?
Death to everybody but us, essentially.
Yeah, and the imperialists, well, they're colonialists, and like, you know, there is no good guy, and well, maybe there shouldn't be.
That's fine. I mean, yeah, moral gray areas are fine.
Yeah. So, yeah, I totally understand why you'd be mad. There wouldn't be like a clear-cut good choice or even just a good neutral choice, but well, you can always just go explore the 50 millionth dungeon if you want and steal gold from zombies.
The thing is that like in Fallout 4, the Far Harbor DLC does a really terrific job of letting you kind of take on a number of different possibilities. You can side with any one of the three factions to the exclusion of the others and just roll that way. But you can also you can kind of help one side kind of achieve its objectives while like completely screwing over another. Or you can be like, let's just make peace with all of these guys. I think a lot of people want to make peace.
Yes, which is nice.
And that's not always possible. But I think that people want that kind of more nuanced storytelling. And they always point to say, Fallout New Vegas as like kind of a sterling example of that, which I always thought was funny because at the end of the day, you're siding with one of the three factions and it always ends with the battle at the Hoover Dam. Like, it's not like you're peacemaking here.
Yeah.
So, like, somebody's going to die regardless. There is going to be a final battle.
There's going to be bloodshed.
Yes, it's a video game. But it was a little awkward in some regards. I think the combat is always going to be a little bit of a weakness in Skyrim. But at this and Elder Scrolls in general, like if people want freaking Dark Souls combat, like go play Dark Souls.
Yeah,
like, that's what it's built around, right? Yeah. That's what Dark Souls is built around. Skyrim is Skyrim. Skyrim is just enjoying the pretty scenery, like effing off and doing your own thing, getting a werewolf girlfriend, whatever. You know, like I really appreciate the Elder Scrolls games just because, and Elder Scrolls in particular, because I like how pretty it is versus Fallout, where I don't really like being in the midst of like, so I have a real phobia for clutter. I hate clutter.
Do you really?
Yes, I don't like clutter. And Fallout is the most cluttered freaking game you will ever play. There's just like garbage everywhere.
Well, yeah, because of the nuclear war, everything's just
I don't like that.
So you could play as like a wanderer cleaning up as you go along. The great wanderer. Yes.
Oh my god, the great garbage collector?
Yeah.
But Skyrim, it's like, okay, everything is much prettier. The houses are much nicer. Like, I'm not going to get a house that doesn't have a roof, which is something that drove me crazy in Fallout 4.
Wow, don't play Dragon Quest Builders.
But the other thing is, like, I play these open world games, and they don't mean anything to me. Like, I feel like there's an automatic remove all the time. Like, I'll play Watch Dogs, I'll play GTA, I'll play even... I'll even play a game like Witcher 3. And because I'm playing another character, and it's usually from a third-person perspective, and the world isn't that interactive, like, it feels like a video game.
Right.
Like, it's just like, okay, I'm playing through this video game. I'm, like, meandering through the quests. And if I don't want to do the quests, like, it doesn't necessarily feel like there's a lot else to do. People are like, well, you can, like, drive a car off a ramp. Oh, that's nice.
You do that in Skyrim with the proper mods, too.
You can drive real fast in GTA 5, and cops will sometimes chase you, and you can shoot at them. And you can, it's like, all right, fine, like... There's stuff to do in that regard, I suppose. But because I've created my own character and I'm kind of like creating my own like self-narrative, I feel like I just automatically have a lot more fun with the Elder Scrolls games, even acknowledging the fact that, no, I don't think the combat is that great. And yes, the story, it kind of bugs me that it railroads me a little too much in the story. And some of the quests, no, they're not that interesting, especially the Radiant quests. But the world that Bethesda has built, there's just not a lot like it. Like,
there isn't.
At all.
And I wrote an article about that a little while ago about how, you know, I was just kind of meandering through the world like I do, and I noticed there was a shack that had a, you know, a tree collapsed on it, and you kind of put two and two together, like, oh, this poor guy, he was just basically died in his shack because the stupid tree fell on him, and I kind of go through his stuff, and I see he has that Argonian maid like erotica It's like, oh, scandalous. I know something about your life now, don't I?
Yeah. It's so, just like in Fallout, finding all the weird stuff in toilets.
Yeah. And you're right, because only Bethesda really takes the time to kind of build their world like that, with their open worlds like that.
I think something that's important to point out is that I'm not saying that GTA or Red Dead or Watch Dogs or Witcher 3 are bad.
No, absolutely not.
I think that within their particular stylistic choices, they're incredibly successful. It's just a matter of preference, right? I know a lot of people for whom, like, the Elder Scrolls and Fallout just leave them completely cold because they are really bothered by the fact that because Bethesda has put all of their resources into building this giant world, that there are automatically going to be some trade-offs, right?
Like, absolutely.
The combat's not going to be as good. The character is going to animate kind of awkwardly. Sometimes the radiant moments are going to be look kind of silly and be immersion-breaking. Mm-hmm. And they go, well, I can't deal with this. That's fine.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
I mean, we're not at a point where, like, a relatively unscripted game can also look completely natural.
Yeah.
Like, they're not operating on true AI here.
Yeah, we'll get there
maybe
someday. Yeah.
But for now, I think it's kind of good enough, right?
Yeah, I can't say I haven't been enjoying Skyrim Remastered, so I'm good.
Yeah, but as for PC owners, I think the main thing with Skyrim Remastered is that the main benefit eventually down the line is that modders are going to have more possibilities because there's going to be more memory due to it being 64-bit.
Yes.
Beyond that, though, like right now, the mods mostly don't work for Skyrim Remastered, which is kind of a disappointment. And the graphical enhancements aren't enough if you've been playing modded Skyrim.
Yeah, exactly. Like I said, it's really more for console owners. And to me, that's fine. But
yeah.
Sorry, PC owners.
I like that we're finally at a point where the console versions of Bethesda's RPGs are almost catching up with the PC versions.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, I mean, there was, for a long time, like, if you were, like, really heavily into the series, like, getting a console version of Fallout was just, or Elder Scrolls was just not a super great investment because, I mean, they couldn't be updated.
Exactly.
And, good God, Skyrim on the PS3 in particular has aged horribly.
Yeah.
Bad times.
Very bad
times. You know, one of the other like criticisms that are that is often levied at Skyrim is that it is too accessible.
Yeah.
That it is too, that it got rid of a lot of the more hardcore elements. And people always kind of long for Morrowind as the height of the series, because it was smaller, it was more handcrafted, it was denser, I suppose. Like, let's be honest, Skyrim's pretty easy.
It is, especially if you turn down the difficulty.
Yeah, like by hour 10, you're almost unstoppable.
Once your sneak stat is up there, you can pretty much destroy anything.
Yeah, and your builds, like, you can kind of be everything. You can be kind of a jack of all trades.
Yes.
In the way that you distribute your points. And I can understand that rubs a long way. But the reason I bring this up is because you wrote this interesting article a couple days ago that was titled "Quit Getting Mad at Easy Mode in Video Games."
Yeah, with apologies to Casey Green.
And I think that this actually ties in rather nicely with RPGs, because RPGs are one of the more hardcore genres, and there seems to be a lot of debate over like accessibility and kind of like how dense an RPG actually should be.
Right.
So the original, what was the original impetus for your article?
It's just something that's been coming up now and again, and it was also brought up with Nier Automata, which apparently is going to be which is apparently going to have like an automatic mode for people who aren't good at action games, quote unquote. So I guess that kind of gets you through the battles trouble free.
So they can see the story, right?
Yeah, basically, we are getting more and more games these days where battle options are you know, toned way down or even just a little bit to give people who want to just experience the story. Like, you know, how many games have you played lately where the casual mode is specifically marked, you know, for people who just, you know, kind of want to relax and enjoy the game's story? I think I just played SteamWorld Heist and that had an option. So, yeah, so I'm okay with it. Some people are definitely not okay with it. And I think it's such a divisive topic, and it doesn't really need to be, because you're talking about an option that 99.9% of the time is completely optional. Hence,
yeah, it's not like you're being railroaded into it.
No,
I'd
hence
be a little
option.
More upset if it made me do that.
Yeah, and but even with a game like Skyrim, you have people who are upset because it is far more streamlined than like Morrowind and the like. You basically, games evolve, games change, and some people are really not into that sort of thing. But the question is, where do you stop? Where do you start? You know what I mean? Like, I will fully admit that my first Elder Scrolls game was Skyrim, and I appreciate that it was so accessible, and it let me dive into it with a minimal amount of trouble. But some people will get really angry at hearing me say that.
I don't think that Bethesda's immune from, like, putting so much focus on being mass market that they've started to compromise the systems.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that there is a way to kind of square that circle and cater to both hardcore fans and also pretty casual fans. I think Pokemon is just a perfect example of how you make an RPG that where they have a rabbit hole that goes as deep as you really want it to go.
Absolutely,
right?
Yes.
Why is Pokemon so enduringly popular? Well, first of all, it has incredibly marketable creatures.
It does. They're really cuddly.
But like Skyrim, interestingly enough, you can write your own story in Pokemon. Once the game is finished, and the story, you know, the story's easy. I mean, it's always going to be easy. But once the game is finished, you can go in so many different directions with it. It's like, okay, well, I want to catch them all. All right, go do that.
Yes.
Oh, I want to go find valuable shinies and be a collector. Mm-hmm. Oh, go do that.
I want to be
the best breeder. Yeah. I want to be the best competitive battler. I just want to go and do all of the post-game content and have fun. Cool.
Yes.
But there's so much to do at any given time. And if you want to be like an uber hardcore competitive battler who's going to be taking place in the VGCs and stuff like that, that is there for you.
Absolutely.
And it makes me happy when that is there. But I don't think that that means that it has to come at the expense of making it accessible.
No, and I have, of course, heard people complain about how Pokemon has become too accessible, too streamlined, and...
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, and it's like, yeah, you know what I don't want to do? I don't want to rifle through all my PC boxes looking for my Pikachu that I gave a stupid name, and now I can't find it.
Speaking as somebody who has been playing Pokemon since the very beginning, anybody who's not happy that you can finally see freaking EVs and, like, have all of these breeding tools are freaking crazy, okay? I don't have 20 hours to breed the perfect Pokemon, okay?
No.
Like, sometimes I just want to get the monster that I want because it's not about going through the busy work of breeding a monster. It's about the experimentation and the creativity of the build of the monster and the moveset and being able to be like, oh, I think that if I modify the EVs a little bit this direction or that direction, I could do something really interesting here, and I'll be able to hit this speed tier, whatever, right? And you take that away when you raise the barrier too much to actually being able to breed these monsters. So quality of life stuff is not streamlining.
Yeah,
okay?
And I think you hit on the nail on the head when you said, I do not have 20 hours to dick around with this. Video games, when we were kids, usually it was, you know, younger people playing them. Kids who had, like, plenty of free time, all these summers to squander away on Mega Man. That's great. But games are at a much more mainstream audience now. Adults enjoy them. Kids enjoy them. And most, you know, all of us, every single one of us, have far less time than we used to. So I just don't have time to, like, spend 20 hours on a game. And some people, you know, going by the reaction to my article, to some people that's blasphemy. But it's true. I think
there are people who are young who do have a lot of time for that. And I don't think it's a matter of having time or not having time. Like, at the end, yes, I don't have time anymore, unfortunately, to throw myself into Battlefield, and which means I can't compete with you crazy kids anymore.
Yeah.
But that's me. Like, if I wanted to, I could devote my life to Battlefield and probably be pretty good. But that's a choice that I have made.
Exactly.
But I do think that there is like this almost this competition going on, especially with RPG fans who are like, oh, well, I play this really, really dense and incredibly difficult to get into RPG. And if you're just not able to understand the systems at play because the UI is garbage, well, that's on you because you're not very smart. Like, having a good UI and having good quality of life stuff is not a drawback.
No, okay? It really isn't.
It's having good onboarding and good tutorials is not a drawback.
No.
And this is like kind of getting away from the original point of your article, which is like including stuff for more casual fans.
Mm-hmm.
But I do see that a lot where people are like going, well, yeah, it's really dense, but you know, like I have unearthed the secrets, wonderful gem of this RPG that you just can't see. So
yeah
sorry.
And one thing people were telling me, one thing people were assuming is that I was calling like to make a casual mode mandatory in every single game, which is not the case at all. I understand that, especially indie developers, they might not have the time or the money necessary to kind of go through their game and offer a casual mode. I'm just saying that I am glad when they are there because I like the idea of games being more accessible. Period. Let's face it, it's not just a matter of I don't have enough time. It's also a matter of some people don't have the mobility necessary to really pull off that sweet ollie or whatever they're doing. You know what I mean?
Hmm. At the same time, though, I do think that it is a stylistic choice for a game like Dark Souls.
Yeah, I absolutely wouldn't say, hey,
the way that it is. And I do think that Dark Souls exists as a kind of a counter argument in a lot of respects to the, well, game should be as open as possible,
mm-hmm,
kind of argument, where it's kind of like this elite thing. And that's where you start to break down into like, okay, should games be this kind of experience or should they be like a raw challenge? Like, where are we going with this? But I think that's a choice that From Software has made.
Right. And
I think that's a valid choice. And I also think it is a valid choice to make a game that is more casual and that like is more open and more accessible to people who are coming in. Like, it's a choice, okay? Like, there are many different types of games. They don't all have to cater to one subset of gamer.
No, I agree. I know Jim Sterling has said he wouldn't mind seeing like a easy mode in Dark Souls, but you know, I can understand why people would not want that, because Dark Souls itself is a game specifically built on challenging people, and I like games like that too. I liked Salt and Sanctuary, which was a hard game. I liked Hyper Light Drifter, which was a very difficult game. I was very satisfied with them. I found them like a good challenge, but you know, it's just people saying, oh, well, if you can't handle Mega Man, then why don't you go play Scribblenauts? Because those are two very, very, very different experiences.
And yeah, I think people were happy when Demon's Souls and Dark Souls came along because there was a big shift toward games that almost played themselves,
mm-hmm,
these AAA games, particularly first-person shooters. And, I mean, the argument would be, well, okay, well, if you find the campaign that basically plays itself kind of boring, well, just go play multiplayer.
Yeah.
And people would be like, well, maybe I don't want to play multiplayer. In which case, like, then Dark Souls came along and it satisfied that kind of itch for a really intense single-player experience.
Right. And
that is fine.
And these are also games that are not cheap. They give you the necessary tells. If you die, it is usually 100% on you. Whereas a Mega Man game, for example, Mega Man 1, it has some pretty cheap moments. So there's definitely a difference between cheap and a difference between actual challenge.
I think that one thing that people have to understand is that just because there are accessible games out there doesn't mean that there aren't hardcore games.
Mm-hmm.
If you want your Dark Souls, go play Dark Souls.
Absolutely.
If you want your like intense super hard roguelike, go play your super intense hard roguelike. But there has to be a starting point. right?
Yes.
There has to be a way to get on board with games. Like, not everybody is born being able to speedrun through Super Mario Brothers or whatever.
No, and I think also there's a big factor in, you know, which game you're getting angry over. My whole point was not so much, hey, developers, start making casual modes. My point was, hey, Mario has a white Tanuki suit. Don't get angry over it, because it's a, you know, as people have brought up in my article, it has been exactly what they needed to get their kids to play alongside with them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, do you get mad at kids who are wearing training wheels? Do you push them over? Do you sit there screaming
yes,
at them?
Yes, they do. Because they need to get good.
They need to get good. But Mario is a, you know, Mario's for everybody. Everybody loves Mario, but, you know, even Super Mario 3D World, that can be as hard or as easy as you want to make it, because, okay, opening stages, regular games, pretty easy, but there are some pretty crazy challenge levels. So
I played New Super Mario Brothers Wii with my mom.
Aw, that's
my
sweet.
Poor mom. My poor mom.
Was she
just
like...
could not keep up.
Aw.
She basically spent the entire game in the bubble. Because, like, the game was too hard, and it kind of broke her, you know? Aww. She's like, screw this stuff. And it was like, okay, well, you could say, well, if you really enjoy games, you're just going to get better. But, like, sometimes, like, it can be, a game can be so intense from the outset that you're like, oh, God, no, screw this. I'm putting this away.
And when you have something like the white Tanuki suit, that's actually a lot more dignified than hanging around in a bubble, because you are participating. You're just not floating there while someone else does all the work for you.
Like I said, it's a hardcore genre in a lot of respects, and like its roots are like in being a nerd, essentially. Mm-hmm. And I think that RPGs have always had an accessibility problem, and I think I want to stress that RPGs aren't a club.
No, they aren't.
They are not your special club, and I think that it's an amazing genre because it can let you become immersed with and interact with a game world in a way that you just don't get with other genres. Like, puzzle games will be like a pure raw challenge for the brain. Action games are twitchy and interesting, but role-playing games are like as close as you're going to get to kind of a hologram.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also that brain component going on where you're like going, okay, well, I'm playing around with these systems. How can I improve my character, etc.? And going back to Final Fantasy or before that, like, RPGs have always had this intimidation problem.
Yes.
With a lot of people where, like, they're going, oh, well, I want to play them, but, man, this is, like, way too intense for me. So I think you have to put people in a place where they can kind of dip their toe in the water and go, okay, well, that's not so bad. And then they can just go from there. Sports games also have this problem, incidentally, where, like, so many people are like, now, screw Madden. You basically have to be an NFL coach to be able to understand what the hell is going on. And to their credit, they've done a really good job of, like, creating kind of a tutorial process that will get you into the game. But it's still, like, really freaking intense. The point is, if RPGs want to be a viable genre that people can continue to make games for, you have to have games that are not so intimidating that people are going to, nope, no, absolutely not. I'm not playing this.
And
Pokemon fulfills that niche, for example.
Yeah. But I was going to say, let's not forget the original Dragon Quest was born out of that need to make Western RPGs a little less intimidating, a little more compact, a little more accessible.
Absolutely. I have the most respect for RPGs that manage to hit both, that are both, like, pretty easy to get into, pretty easy to understand and pick up, but at the same time have really interesting systems. Like, Persona 4, I think, is a fantastic example of that, where it's like, okay, like, you just start going, you're, like, kind of learning this mysterious world with the characters, and it can be a little intimidating in that you're going, what am I supposed to be doing today? Am I missing something? Like, this is making me super stressed out. You get, like, some serious FOMO in Persona 4. but it's pretty transparent in the way that its systems work, and it gives you really good feedback. It's like, okay, Well, you have a good social link. And oh, look at the boosts on your the demons. It says right there, big boost for your demons. And it's like, great, okay. And like the satisfaction of putting together a really good party full of very powerful demons is really great in Persona 4. Mm-hmm. And I think that the denser, more hardcore RPGs can actually be pretty bad about giving effective feedback, about yes. having good UIs, about just throwing players into the deep end and going, go, and expecting them to have the time and the energy and the interest, frankly, to read through a giant wiki, trying to figure everything out. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's like, okay, well, unless if the game isn't immediately compelling, it can be sometimes hard for me to engage to the point that I'm going to want to give the game time to become interesting.
Yeah, like one thing I'm always paranoid with big open RPGs is that I am doing something wrong. And if a game is not giving me any sort of feedback one way or the other, I'm going to get very intimidated.
Anyway, I think the upshot of this is that games exist for all kinds of different people and all kinds of people with different abilities, and people should stop feeling freaking threatened by game mechanics that are designed to make them more accessible, because more often than not, there will be, like, the good games, at least, have deeper systems that a truly skilled player can eventually plumb and become much better at. Mm-hmm. And so what? People who are, like, new or aren't as good as you are playing your game, that you shouldn't feel threatened by that, okay? Maybe one day they will be as good as you.
Yeah, that would be the nightmare.
Talk about Exist Archive really quickly.
Indeed.
How much have you played it, Nadia?
I played it about a couple hours in, but then the game didn't save properly and booted me back to the start.
Alas. Were you playing on PS4?
I was playing on PS4.
Okay. I was playing on the Vita, and the Vita version isn't super great.
No? Is it like a problem with the visuals? Because the visuals are gorgeous. No problems there for me.
Long load times.
Really?
And it crashes and will kick you back to the title screen a few times.
So. That's too bad.
Yeah. So a lot of people, so in case you're not familiar with Exist Archive, a lot of people kind of call it the spiritual successor to Valkyrie Profile. It is made by Trias. And like Valkyrie Profile, it features characters who have kind of gone to the afterlife. Mm-hmm. And it has a very similar battle system where you have characters with their actions mapped to their face buttons.
Yes.
And you rush in and you attack, and you're it differs from Valkyrie Profile in that you have enemy groupings spread out. Mm-hmm. And so you have to think about how you want to go in and attack, and like what kind of attacks you want to be able to use to be able to hit the largest number of enemies possible. And so it's kind of interesting in that regard. There are no towns to explore.
Yeah, I noticed.
The quests are from a menu that you pick. Mm-hmm. And most of the story is doled out through, you know, your traditional cutscenes. And you also can find kind of flashbacks to people's lives before they got thrown into this world. The dungeon exploration is similar to Valkyrie Profile in that it is a 2D kind of a platforming thing. Mm-hmm,
which is really interesting.
Yeah, where you activate, like you defeated, you activate these kind of rifts that like shoot you in different places. Mm-hmm. To reach higher platforms. Personally, I've never been a giant fan of that kind of those kind of traversal puzzles. I think the original Valkyrie Profile maybe did it best, where mm-hmm. you would freeze an enemy and like jump to the next level, but I've never found it like super amazing or anything. So here's the thing with Exist Archive. It's okay. It captures some of the systems from Valkyrie Profile. It is not Valkyrie Profile. Mm-hmm. A lot of people call it a spiritual successor to Valkyrie Profile. I think that's kind of insulting to Valkyrie Profile.
Is there, do you think there's like any hope to fix your problems in like a sequel, for example? Like, would you like to see a sequel?
I just don't think that we're ever going to see another game like Valkyrie Profile. Mm. And that has been borne out in the actual sequels to Valkyrie Profile.
Oh, yes.
So here's the deal. I've talked about Valkyrie Profile before. And let me be clear. Exist Archive deserves to be enjoyed on its own merits. Mm-hmm. Which is why I'm like, so let's not say that this is a spiritual successor to Valkyrie Profile, because it has a lot of similarities. It's made by the same developer. Thematically, it's kind of ish similar, but it is nowhere near as compelling as Valkyrie Profile in my mind, because Valkyrie Profile interested me and still holds a very special place in my heart, because it is a game that puts you in the shoes of the character Lenneth Valkyrie in a way that is actually pretty remarkable. Mm-hmm. Where it encourages you to discover your own past, and it encourages you, it lays out a path for you forward through the game. It's like, it gives you very clear instructions. Recruit Ayn Harriar, build them up, send them to heaven. Mm-hmm. And then you can kind of follow their progress in the spiritual warfare that's going on. But if you do that, if you do exactly what you are told, you will get a mediocre ending. You have to stray from the beaten path, and you have to kind of suss out, like, what does the seal rating mean? Who is this vampire guy? Who are these characters? You have to be willing to not just go to a dungeon and explore.
Right.
You have to be willing to go check out that strange castle, even though there's only a limited amount of time in each segment or each act or whatever, each period, mm-hmm. I think it was called. Even though you have only a limited amount of time, like, you need to be able to be like, well, what's in that castle over there?
Right.
And, or what's this field all about? And yeah, you're probably not going to figure this out without the help of a guide. Like, I certainly used a strategy guide to figure that out. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people will call that a flaw. I don't necessarily think that's the case. I mean, I think it's actually not that hard to get the good ending if you play it on hard and if you're willing to put some thought into it. Exist Archive doesn't really have anything like that.
Yeah, it seems kind of straightforward.
Exist Archive is pretty straightforward. You got the story is, you know, there are two gods and, like, the characters are chess pieces and they're war between the gods. And yeah, like, it's similar to that. Like, Lenneth is a chess piece, like a pawn, and it's all about, like, breaking out of being a pawn and, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. But that particular role-playing element is missing. And beyond that, like, Valkyrie Profile had a lot of things that I found just really special about it. Its art style was phenomenal. Mm-hmm. I mean, its art was phenomenal. Its music was excellent. I love the sprite work. Like, these are all, like, really important things like that really define the flavor of Valkyrie Profile. And moreover, like, I found the actual, like, stories that were being told about the individual in Ayn Harriar, like, really poignant. Mm-hmm. Some of them were like some of those stories were, you know, there are a few boring ones in there, but a lot of them were just downright tragic and, like, really, like, even intense. Like, one of my favorite things in Valkyrie Profile is that there's this party of adventurers and how each one of them, they get picked off one by one and you're just collecting their souls and until only one of them is left and she doesn't die. And you're just like, man, that's brutal, right? Yeah. Like, being the only one just being left behind. And all the ways that they die like, there's some really messed up ones. Like, one of them gets turned to stone. Mm-hmm. Like, there's somebody gets, like, turned into a demon. There's a guy who kills himself so that he can join Leneth. Like, it goes on. Like, there's somebody who gets betrayed by, like, the crown. Like, you see all of these machinations happening on Earth that can be a little murky. And it paints a very interesting world that ultimately concludes with an extremely satisfying ending.
Yeah, Exist Archive, from what I can tell, it has an interesting story, but there's a lot of anime cliches at work. So that's not necessarily a bad thing, but as you say, it's not quite as compelling as...
Right. It is a pretty straightforward RPG that uses some of Valkyrie Profile's systems. And if I'm being perfectly honest, I don't think Valkyrie Profile's systems were that special to begin with.
I didn't.
Certainly not the battle system. The battle system is okay in Valkyrie Profile, but it gets really repetitive.
Yeah, and I noticed
Exist Archive, to its credit, builds on those.
But I did read a lot of reviews that complained about it getting repetitive, the battles.
Oh, for sure. Like, it's super grindy.
Yeah.
For one thing. Like, you do have to go out. I mean, you do have to go out and you have to grind to be able to keep up with the level of the enemies as they grow.
So this is the kind of game where you really need that story to push you forward. But right. I'm not sure if, from what I played, if Exist Archive can do exactly that. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm glad that these niche RPGs exist, and I really hope they keep on existing and that developers keep building on them. But it's also a matter of, well, okay, I've got all these other games to play, and I like you, but I don't like you.
I think what it comes down to is that Trieste is aware that people really love Valkyrie Profile, and that they are trying to make something sort of like it on a budget.
Yes.
A real budget.
Yes.
Like, the art is just not that great. I mean, that's what it comes down to, and maybe, like, that makes me a graphic snob or whatever, but...
I found the backgrounds were very nice, but the battle scenes were kind of like, oh, okay.
I think the art really does actually make a difference a lot of the times, and, I mean, it went with more of a generic anime kind of thing. Like, these kids come from, like, modern Tokyo, and, like, they conform to all the types. And that's not to say Valkyrie Profile was immune to anime cliches. It certainly was not.
No.
But... Exist Archive's characters kind of bore me, to be perfectly honest. You got your straightforward stoic, you got your straightforward hero, pretty bog standard hero, pretty bog standard girl who's like mysterious girl who's following him around and
has a high squeaky voice.
And has a high squeaky voice, and it's like, okay, that's fine. My point is, I just don't think Trieste is going to make another game as unique as Valkyrie Profile. Like, this, everything about Valkyrie Profile was just really interesting, from the story to the characters to the format, like the structure of the game. And you even saw it in, like, Valkyrie Profile 2. Like, that game was much more straightforward. It had a much higher budget than Exist Archive, and in many ways was very interesting, especially in the battle systems and that kind of thing. But at the end of the day, like, it was a pretty straightforward RPG. Like, it did not... It was... You're playing through the story. You're beating some dungeons. You're fighting the bosses at the end. It wasn't like Valkyrie Profile, where it was doing crazy things like... Even cycling out and having different dungeons depending on what difficulty level you played. Which kept it from getting overly repetitive. So, I feel like Trieste has moved away from that. And that makes me feel like if there ever actually was a true Valkyrie Profile sequel, it would not live up to my memories of the original.
It's really kind of like the Suikoden conundrum, where it's like you think, oh, I'd love to see a spiritual successor to that, but the series hasn't really been Suikoden for many, many years across many installments.
So... that's why I'm just like, there will never be another Valkyrie Profile. Not as I remember it. Just because it has an action-based battle system and characters who died. That does not make it Valkyrie Profile.
Yeah, okay. And those are always the... Even though the spiritual successor is like, even if they play well on their own, as you say, Exist Archive does, they're the ones that kind of hurt, because you realize that that magical game from your childhood is just, you can't repeat it, and you can't go home again, as it were.
No, absolutely not. Do I think that there is room for creativity based on these systems to perhaps make something as unique and interesting as Valkyrie Profile? Certainly do. A developer just has to be willing to go and do that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think the closest we might have gotten to a true sequel to Valkyrie Profile was probably Lightning Returns, actually. Just
wow.
In the open-ended nature of it and the timing aspect of it and kind of the mysterious nature of everything. Mm-hmm. It makes me sad that they shoehorned Final Fantasy XIII into that game, because if it were just... If it were something else, it would have been way more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people would have been a lot more inclined to enjoy it on its own merits. But on its own merits, Exist Archive is fine. I think that it is a kind of a mid-tier budget RPG.
Yeah, basically.
Nothing particularly offensive about it. I think the battle system is actually really good this time around, for the most part, grinding aside. I like that there are different classes.
Mm-hmm.
And that... you can kind of like mix and match things a little bit more with the weapons than you could in Valkyrie Profile, where things were a lot more static.
Yes.
So that's a good thing. I think the music is excellent.
Yeah, music was very nice.
The dungeons are not amazing, but it's enough to pass the time.
Yeah.
I wish that the Vita port were a little better.
Yeah, the PlayStation...
So you should probably play it on PS4.
Yeah, the PS4 version, I don't know what I did to screw up my save, but technically it works fine. Like, I didn't notice any major loading times, or I didn't notice any crashing or anything like that.
I think the thing that makes me saddest is that Valkyrie Profile is still extremely difficult to find.
Mm-hmm. I'd love to play it, but, well, I've had a very kind listener offer to send it to me, and I might take them up on that.
Yeah, even if you play the PSP game, the PSP game is not available in the PlayStation Store.
Yeah.
So you can't exactly download it onto your Vita. You have to own a PSP to play it, which is a real drag, mm-hmm. actually. And you're not going to find it on PSN anywhere.
Yeah, that's
it's
really
just,
too bad.
I don't know what's going on. I know that there's a mobile game. Like, Square Enix hasn't ditched it entirely. But
boy.
But Valkyrie Profile at this point is much harder to play even than Suikoden, which used to be the hardest to find
yeah.
and play. And that's a super drag, because I think people need to play this game. It's
mm-hmm.
phenomenal. It really works on so many levels, and it's my favorite RPG of all time. But as it stands right now, if you want to play it like the way it's meant to be played, you really honestly need to spend like $100 to buy it used,
mm-hmm.
and you need to have like a PS2 hooked up to a CRT television, and because it doesn't look super great on HD,
probably not.
Like, it gets really washed out, and the sprites don't pop as well as they should.
Mm-hmm.
It looks much, much, much better on a CRT television.
Yeah, and like I said, I have a CRT. I have a really good CRT for my retro games, so no problems mm-hmm. there. And I have a PS2.
Yeah, I've often thought about picking up a CRT television, but unfortunately, I don't have a lot of room for it.
Yeah, they're big, bulky, stupid things.
Yeah, and I have enough on my plate right now. I know in my heart that I would buy this thing with all these retro consoles, and then it would just sit there. Probably. There's also a possibility that I would just fall head over heels for these and never emerge again.
Yeah.
And you would never hear of me again. That would be it. It was just like lock my room, myself in my office, and play Valkyrie Profile and Final Fantasy VIII again forever.
Blood God would become the retro hour. Retro
hour. It already is kind of the retro hour.
It kind of is,
isn't
it?
You just spent 20 minutes talking about Valkyrie Profile, at this point, 16-year-old RPG.
Well, Skyrim, Skyrim is 5 years old, but it's valid because it just got a re-release. So.
Pretty much. In any case, Valkyrie Profile, if you can get a hold of it, that you definitely should. And And once again, I send up my plea to Square Enix and to Sony. Please, for the love of God, put this game on PSN so that we can find a way to play it for realsies, because this game deserves to be enjoyed. And finally, please, please stop calling this a spiritual successor to Valkyrie Profile, because it is Exist Archive is nothing of the sort. It is an off-brand Valkyrie Profile, and that's pretty much all it is. Does that make it bad necessarily? No, it makes it budget.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish Trias all the best. I want them to succeed. I want them to make more games. But at the same time, their games haven't been good for a while now.
Aw, I'm sorry, Kat. I know how disappointing and hurtful that can be.
So that's the end of our episode. No, sorry, no RPG pitches this time around, because we kind of went a little long again. We had lots of ranting to do in this episode.
We did quite well.
We ranted about accessibility, and we ranted about Valkyrie Profile, and we ranted about people hating Skyrim. It was rant.
It's the angry old woman hour.
Yeah, exactly. Acts of the Blood God is a U.S. Gamer podcast. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and anywhere RPGs are sold or podcasts are sold. not RPGs. I would love it if you could leave us a review if you're enjoying the podcast.
Please do.
Yes, we always appreciate it. I read all of the reviews. When I get a nice one, I go, oh, thank you. I'm glad that you guys enjoy having Nadia on the podcast. I know that I enjoy having Nadia on the podcast.
I enjoy that you guys enjoy me.
lots of coverage going on the site right now. Jeremy did a really good... Jeremy's been covering the hell out of the mini NES. Mm-hmm. I've been on the fence about buying one myself, but I don't know. Like, outside of the novelty of having one of those things on my... because they look so cool.
They are very cute.
They are very cute. I'm kind of like, I don't know. It's just another thing that I'm going to have in my office, so I'm not sure. Of course, Nadia and I have been writing things. By the time this podcast is live, you should be able to find my rant/retrospective about Exist Archive and Valkyrie Profile, which I also covered in some depth here on the podcast. So I strongly encourage you to check that out. And Nadia, of course, we can find you on Twitter at Nadia Oxford, and your blog, Tiny Girl, Tiny Games. Do you have anything else you want to promote right now?
Just that by the time this is up, my Skyrim review will probably be up as well. And please do read my little thingy about quit getting mad at easy mode in video games if you haven't already. I'd appreciate that very much, whether you agree or not.
Gaming elitists. God, that's the freaking worst. Yeah, and of course, you can find me on Twitter at @_catbot. Sorry. Like, I have seen your RPG pitches. Thank you for sending them to me. Please keep sending them, mm-hmm. and I will read them on the podcast. We've just had a lot to cover.
Yeah, it's that time of year.
But I think next week we might have a little more cover. We might have a little more time.
Yeah.
To cover this stuff. So, but in the meantime, keep sending those. So, looking ahead to November, we got a couple of biggies coming up, Nadia. We got Pokemon
and Final Fantasy, no big deal.
Yeah, no big deal.
Just the two biggest games.
So that should carry us until December.
Yeah.
And then start looking ahead to Persona 4.
Yay.
Tyranny. I should have a code for that pretty soon. And yes, I do intend to be talking about that on the podcast. I'm going to make Nadia play it, and she's going to like it.
I can play it, but you can't make me like it. You lead a dragon to water, you can't make him drink.
Indeed. All right. So this has been an Acts of the Blood God. Thanks for listening, and for Nadia and myself, I've been Kat Bailey, and until next time, happy adventuring.